Welcome to another inspirational message from Hillsong Church, London.
Okay, let me today, because I've got a bit that I want to get through, and there's a few things we want to do. And we said it's Heart for the House Sunday, and so maybe just building on a little bit from what talked about last Sunday, and go from there. And I guess, you know, just to maybe frame things a bit. Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 19, and I'm going to read from the Message Bible, and what's interesting, it's just sort of bringing together this bit where Paul who's the author of this letter to the church in Ephesus, has sort of pulled together the fact that there's sort of no longer Jews, there's no longer Gentiles. There's just, in God's eyes, there's just one people group. And that people group in the eyes of God is those who fall in line of what we know as what Paul unpacks in Romans chapter 5 as in the line of humanity restored. Jesus being the firstborn in the line of humanity restored. And the fact that when we make a decision to believe in him, we make a decision to put our faith in what his death on that cross and his resurrection and subsequent ascension into heaven, the sending of the Holy Spirit and all of that, what that is for us is a little bit like, if you can put it like this, God gives all of humanity a brand new start, or the potential of it. And in the NIV version, when it's referring to this, just before I read what I was going to read, it uses the term a new humanity. And I think sometimes if we can really get our heads around just what the significance of the message, the gospel of Jesus Christ and everything that's about, it really is about humanity's second chance. And it's not just a second chance of the same old, it's a second chance at a brand new. And that brand new is life in a world that is sustained out of a relationship with the God who created us. And so Paul sort of is just, he's sort of finished explaining that a little bit. And then he just makes this statement. He says, that's plain enough, isn't it? That you're no longer wandering exiles. This kingdom of faith is now your home country. You are no longer strangers or outsiders. You belong here with as much right to the name Christian as anybody. And so he's talking about Jews and Gentiles. And in this context, and if you sort of think, well, who the heck is a Gentile? Best way to sort of get your head around it is the Gentiles are everyone else, essentially, other than who the Jews were back in that day. And so he's saying, hey, everyone has got as much right to what this Christian thing is as anybody else. He's not just the God of the Jews, and he's not just the God of the Gentiles. He's the God of all humanity. And Jesus makes that available to everyone. He says here, he says, God is building a home. He's using us all, irrespective of how we got here, in what he is building. He used the apostles and the prophets for the foundation. Now he's using you. Now he's talking, you got to think he's using you. He's using me, he's using you. If we're not careful, sometimes we think God is doing things because he's using someone else. Actually, his intent is he's using you. And if we, without getting too sidetracked, understand every single one of us, whether we've discovered it yet or we haven't, God has uniquely put something in us that we might contribute to this building of this home, as he refers to it, so that we're all supposed to participate. We're all supposed to contribute to it, and we've all got something to bring. Don't look at your life and think, you know what have I got to bring to the table? Sometimes it's really easy to go into, you know, I'm just a worm and got nothing to offer in life. But the reality is, in God's eyes, you've got lots to offer. In fact, he put something in you so that you've got that something to offer. And so he goes on and he says, now he's using you, fitting you in brick by brick, stone by stone, with Jesus Christ as the cornerstone that holds all the parts together. We see it taking shape day after day, a holy temple built by God, all of us built into a temple which God is quite at home. Now, there's lots I could get really sidetracked on everything here, but that's not the point of today. Really, the reality is if you look at this, and I just wrote this little statement following on from last week, this home is the healthy habitat that you and I get to grow in as Christians, the Church of Jesus Christ. And the funny thing is in which the uniqueness of you, yours and ours, there's this blending together where it is about my life, it is about what God's doing in me, but it's not just what God's doing in me, it's what God's doing in us. This is our thing, this is my thing. And there's this blending together when it comes to us coming into this thing that Jesus calls Christianity, or the Bible we refer to, I should say, as Christianity. Paul talks about this house of God, or the home in which God is quite at home that he is building, is this blend of this, our lives, the uniqueness of me calling this is my, to being able to say this is ours. We are doing, there's this unique blend together that really is what is happening here. And so all of us, he says here, are being built together brick by brick, stone by stone, and coming together for this thing called the house of God, him building something where he refers to as I'm quite at home in this. And I guess the interesting thing is just on that, you know, the reality is every single one of us, if we think like this, right? So, and some of this is just, if you've been around a while, said, yeah, we've thrown these ideas around, but there's so much of it there's so much, this is his story, meaning Jesus. But you know, the reality is his story is is seen in my story. So if I want to be able to tell people about Jesus, put it that way, then one of the best ways to tell someone else about Jesus is to tell Jesus is to reveal his story inside my story. And so it's very much about it's about his story and my story. But you know what? I've got a story to tell, and my story fits into our story. And if we actually recognize, then our story fits into the story of the city that we live in, the region, or areas that we are part of, and then we can go on to the city and beyond. And so it is his story that fits into my story. My story fits into our story, and our story fits into the story of the city in which we live in. Yeah? Now, let me just give you a couple of thoughts on just as we sort of move forward. In Acts chapter 13, verse 34, you know, if we were to try and sit down and go, okay, a heart for the house, let's focus on perhaps the missional side of it. A missional meaning, what are we out there doing something? What are we trying to accomplish? We could probably say there's lots of things we could do, there's lots of things we should do, there's lots of things we need to do, and there's some of them we can do. But really, it's more about ultimately long-term, what is the result that we're believing to see? And so in Acts chapter 13, verse 34, I'm trying to find Acts in my Bible, it's just disappeared. Oh, here it is. Okay, Acts chapter 13, let me come here, verse 44. And it says, so this is Paul and Barnabas, they've been speaking in a synagogue, and in verse 34, it says this, it says, the following week, so this is, you know, you can read the account up until this in yourself. I more want to get listen what happened. He says, the following week, almost the entire city turned out to hear them preach the word of the Lord. The entire city. You know, I've said this before, but you know, if we're going to sit down and go heart for the house, and ultimately if it's linked to the mission of our lives together, the mission of my life as a unique person whose life is linked together that forms the hour. What is the goal? It's the whole city. The whole city. The whole city is going to turn out to hear the word of the Lord. I don't know about you, but I believe it can be done. The reason I know that it can be done is because it's already happened. Right? And I think I said last week when I was speaking, we're not, let's believe to at least be able to say, God, we did it again. It happened again. More than, you know, sometimes then we'll try and get into getting God to do what he hasn't done before. But until then, if we sit and go right at the heart of what we're about, that there is his story that's revealed in my story. My story is a part of our story. Our story is in the story of this city. Let's be believing God that we're going to build a church where the story of this city, part of what is told, is the impact that perhaps we could have on a city like this that ends up resulting in things like, and everybody started turning out to hear the word of the Lord, right? Then in Acts chapter 14 and verse 3, it takes it from, and the whole city turned out to hear. And you know, I really want to just, come on, I believe we need to be believing that we're going to go way beyond where we are. Way beyond. And if I can, you know, just this is a little bit of recapping on, you know, our journey and everything. But honestly, I can remember walking around the West End when I first arrived in London, walking around with Gio, he and Julie have been in the church since forever. And I used to say to him, we're going to fill these theaters one day. We're going to fill them one day for the glory of God. And Gio's a really nice guy because he would just look and he'd, yeah, right? But it was only years later he revealed that he thought I was absolutely crazy. And I can remember I used to come in from Australia or somewhere, you fly over the city and look down and see the O2 Arena and go, one day, God, one day, one day, God, one day, God. And Michael Brown used to always come up to me and say, Gary, we're going to do church in the O2 Arena. Yeah, Michael. But come on, we as a church, let's be believing. And that, because see, it goes beyond just the impact on a city, but in verse 3 of chapter 14, it says that Paul is, once again, there's a little bit of stirring going on. And then it goes on, it says, and Paul stayed in this region for 2 years. And in this 2 years, the whole region that surrounded Ephesus had actually turned out to hear the word of the Lord. The whole region. Now, I read that, and I read that a while back, and I looked at it and I thought, This is not, when we stand up and say, can we win a city to Christ? Can we win a nation to Christ? Can we impact a continent? These are things that these dudes have done it before. And so when it comes to us thinking about our church, yes, Heart for the House is about some of the present needs and things like that, but it very much is about part of the journey of step by step, layer by layer, brick by brick, building the possibilities of what God can do. If you were around 16 years ago when we're in Westminster University, and we would have saw this as miraculous. But some of you have come into this and just gone, oh wow, this is interesting. And often just to think, and I want to challenge the young people in our church, is this better not be your vision? These are the things that I and those around then were dreaming about what God can do with. What are you dreaming God can do with us? Come on, what is beyond? What beyond this? And I'm saying that because I believe that it's absolutely possible. In Acts chapter 19 and verse 8, there's just this statement, and we've been using this, has been a part of sort of the theme in and out of this year in the life of our church. And it says here, it says that Paul was preaching and the Lord did unusual miracles. And then it goes on, it talks about unusual miracles in the context of people getting healed. But let's just take the unusual miracles and just sort of build it and think way bigger. Unusual miracles. And let's not lose sight of the most important and the number one unusual miracle that can take place is a person's life who gets pointed to Jesus and he's revealed to them and they make a decision, I'm going to believe in him. I'm going to make a decision to believe in him. There's lots of people have heard about him, but the believing in him is the key. And then from that step of believing in him, it's like, and I'm going to put my faith in what he did for me. And from that, what he did for me, and the miracle is this, it's not just that I believed and I put faith, but the miracle is that it actually leads me into this thing that I opened up with, this new creation thing, that humanity gets a second start. Every single human being on the planet, if we can just accept, you know, it's interesting in Matthew chapter 9, when Matthew first started following Jesus, and when he gets up and follows Jesus, the next thing that happens is Matthew has a dinner party. He invites Jesus, he invites the Jesus people, and he invites his friends, because it says there's a whole lot of other disreputable sinners in the place. And it turns out that the religious people were there. The religious people were ticked off that Jesus was hanging out with not religious people. And then they sort of question him, and he makes this statement. He says, I haven't come for those that see themselves as healthy. I come for those that are prepared to admit the fact that they're a sinner. Yes. Yeah. And if we can just, every single person on this planet understands that all it has to do is to admit that it's a sinner. And then just say, okay, I'm turning to him. I'm going to believe in him, that he made a way, that this thing that dominates my life, that for some people they're too scared to admit it does, this thing that messes people's lives up, this nature that we have that is outside of the influence of God on an eternal perspective of who we are, we get a chance to step into a relationship with God that Bible says changes us from the inside. And as he changes us on the inside, it affects the look of the outside. That's the greatest. If we're talking about miracles, that is the greatest miracle. And pretty much all the other miracles of God were always there and seemed to be there to point people to him so that the greatest miracle of all could be made a possibility. And let's be believing that thousands upon thousands of people are going to come to know Jesus because of what God does through us in the hour of our church. You know, this year already, I don't know where they are, but anyway, over 8,000 people have made decisions so far this year. 8,000 people. I mean, that just blows my mind. 8,000 people already this year. And that's the greatest miracle of all. And so if that's the greatest miracle of all, it ought to be the thing that drives us the most. Do you get what I'm saying? All right. So let me just, you know, when it comes to just the whole, you know, we're into sort of heart for the house. And, you know, when it comes to the unusual things, if we just think about even the things that we do in the life of our church, all right. You know, there's sort of things that we do that are like catalysts. In other words, it's like, well, here's something. Let's see if God's in this. Or let's see if we can make a difference in this area. And often over the course of time in the life of our church, there's been things that we've tried and they've been absolute failures. And there's things that we've tried and it's been absolutely successful. And so there's this sort of mixture of ideas, there's this mixture of response to things, there's these opportunities that we have, and they usually come to us in very small ways And if I was to look back over the course of our church, Heart for the House has given us the ability to respond to things in small, that have small beginnings that have had the potential to become something quite significant. And, you know, and there's, so there's ideas that come our way. And we, you know, usually ideas, I'm amazed at how many people bring an idea to me because, well, they want me to work out how I'm going to fund it for them. I'm looking for people where I can go, you know, I got an idea. You're going to help me fund this? We could reverse this. That's what I usually say. So I usually say now when someone comes with an idea, business plan, business plan, business plan. What's a business plan? Where are you going to get the money from? All right? So there's ideas, there's opportunities. And opportunities are, you know, are things like we got an opportunity to build this building in Bermondsey. Now we say Bermondsey, but it's actually central London. We get a chance to build a building. That is an opportunity that's a God opportunity that comes our way. And it's going to require whatever to make it become a reality. But Heart for the House and Kingdom Builders helps us make those opportunities become realities. The life of the church has great potential when it comes to ideas. Give you, for example, ideas. We had an idea once that what if we sponsor children with compassion? Then we took that idea over after a few years and said, what if we take that from just sponsoring children anywhere to sponsoring children together in one location, and we just get a whole lot of different child projects and put them all in the one location and see if we can make a difference. Just an idea. Come on, as a church, why not follow compassion? And that idea, this, and so if you think, this idea is a great example of the power of collective giving. Because they say now, we're just in conference in New York where that was just announced that I think we've just passed, as Hillsong Church, whether it be sponsored inside our church or by people at our conferences saying, oh, I'm going to sponsor a child, we've just passed the 50,000th child, right? Now, 50,000 kids is a lot of kids. Now, they say that the lifespan of someone sponsoring one of these kids is 7 years. So if you do your math and take 50,000 and you times it by 25 pounds, and then you times it by 12, and then you times it by 7, it comes at around about 104,218,000. So when people say, what do we do as a church to help the poor? That's approximately 159,600,000 US dollars. Now, I don't know about you, but I went. Now, I think I'm right because I've done it 10 times. I was even going to try, and if I was smart enough, do it so that I could do it on my phone and it'd be on the screen as I did it. So you go, wow. But you think of the impact of those kids' lives and the impact on poverty. But you think of the power of collective giving. We together. Amazing, eh? It's fascinating. But then there's things that we get to respond to. Responses. Let me just show you something. In August 2011, there was this thing that happened in London called London Riots. We got some of the pictures of, if you don't know, if you're not aware of it. Here's just some of things. This is London Riots 2011. So just, if you just, you look at that. Now, I don't know what your response was, but mine was punks. You know, it really doesn't matter what that response is, whether it is outrage, whether it is just, you know, however. And I know just talking to a lot of people who were affected, there was a lot of outrage and things like that. But then you've got to go past that, haven't you? And I can remember just one day, and I was talking about, hey, why don't we, what if we all cared? What if we all contributed? Blah, blah, blah. And one of our guys, Nick Ruff, who was part of our team then, he just had this idea. What if we started a high school program and we went into high schools? Because we didn't really have a youth ministry then. What if we go into high schools and what if we teach these people that we just labeled as punks, just that there's a hope and there's a future? And what if we taught them that you don't have to do that, because you know that you have got, there is a future for you. For you, not just for everyone, but for you as well. And what if we did that? Now, the response to that was, over the last 4 years, we've taken that, and 48,000 teenagers have we've been talking to. Now, the reason I'm saying that, like, because that's a lot of people. Whichever way you look at it, that's a lot of people. But it's because we've had the ability to respond. Now, the response wasn't enormous in its beginning, but over time, the response is pretty good, to the point now where we go, okay, from that, we've developed a really great youth ministry. We've got a fantastic youth conference for young people on next Sunday, which is all about teaching them how to face life with a great sense of optimism from a fearless perspective. Let's take the message one step further to this generation that four years ago was potentially, we say, come on, this London's got a problem. What are we going to do? What are we going to respond? Out of responding, rather than just having an opinion, there's a track. Do you get what I'm saying? So Heart for the House enables us to explore some ideas. It enables us to respond to things. It enables us to grab the opportunities that come our way. And you know, and then for what reason, which I guess is probably the most important thing. You know, in Daniel chapter 6, if I in verse 26, I'm one of these people that sort of looks at things and go, well, if God did it then, he can do it now. Yeah. You know? And so this is Daniel. This is he's lived his life. He's been in a place where he has constantly been accused of not following the norms of society. And at this point, he finds himself what we know as thrown in the lion's den. And thrown in the lion's den, the king says to him before he goes in, he says, King Darius, he says, may the God in whom you serve so faithfully be able to rescue you. The king comes back the next morning and calls out, Daniel, has the God in whom you serve so faithfully been able to rescue you? Daniel calls out and says, hey, God shut the mouths of the lions. And the conflict between what Daniel represented and the culture that he was in is very similar to the world in which we live in today. Because see, he was from the Israelites, which represented the kingdom of God and God's ability to do for mankind. And that's what they represent. Daniel come from that. But he come into a culture that Babylon, always when you read through Babylon, pretty much represents the kingdom of man and human ability. And Daniel's constantly in a position where he's been questioned or pressured, either questioned for not or being pressured to worship something other than his God. The interesting thing that he was pressured into worshiping wasn't worshiping other gods or other idols. The thing that he was pressured into worshiping was a man. And in Babylon, if you look through and you follow through, these kings were incredibly narcissistic kings. They were the man. They were the personality. everyone followed him on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And they had their own Snapchat thing going. And everybody was following them, except Daniel. Because Daniel refused to bow down to this whole cult of personality thing. And in everything that we do, whatever we're, our opportunities, whatever our response as a church, whatever the ideas we try, I want us to make sure that everything that we're about is about one thing, most importantly, above all other things, and that is that it's His name is the name that we're pointing people to. His name is the one that we elevate. That we're not going to get caught up into the my name's going to be elevated because of what we do, or someone else, and we're not following man, we're following God. And Daniel, the interesting thing is Daniel refused. Now he served, it didn't mean he didn't serve man, because he was actually obviously very good at it, because he served five kings, key influence all five kings. He got through unscathed. So he's obviously good at what his job. He was trusted with the king's riches, with the king's interests, but he never ever got caught up in the elevation of the things of man and the achievement of man and the profile of man. He always, his eyes were on his God. And then this is what it says that happened. And so King Darius sent this message to the people of every race and nation and language throughout the world. Peace and prosperity to you. I do decree that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and he will endure forever, and his kingdom will never be destroyed and his rule will never end. He rescues and saves his people and he performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And then it says this, so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and Cyrus the Persian. And it just goes into chapter 7. And if you can understand the rest of it, you're better than me. But the impact this one person's life had wasn't because of what he did, it was because he the name that he constantly was lifting up. And Heart for the House is about us being able to, as I said, pursue the ideas, the dreams, seize the day on the opportunities, respond to things. Who knows what'll happen with the whole refugee situation in Europe? But hey, we didn't know what would happen when we moved past just saying, oh, punks, the London riots. Who knows what's going to happen when we just move past, hey, you with me? And Heart for the House is about seeing every aspect of the life of our church move forward. As I said, the opportunities, the ideas, the responses that we need to make, and believing that we as a church, not only is it just about me and my relationship with Jesus, but it's about us as a church being a light in a city that points to a name. A name that represents the answer to the plight of the world that we live in, because it deals with the condition of the human heart. Yeah? And I said last week, and I guess, you know, let me sort of finish up my contribution here. If we remember that yesterday's Heart for the House achievements are just the mere expectations of our church today. Imagine, church, imagine what tomorrow could look like. If we seize the day, the moment, and we all get a chance to participate in this and understand the power of working together as one.
This is the end of this podcast. We hope you have been challenged and inspired. For more information about Hillsong Church London, please visit hillsong.co.uk.